He scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, happy Wednesday. Let's get another hour of Flames Talk going. It's Wednesday, April 24th. Welcome to our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Welcome to this hour with Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hello, AV. How are we doing?
We're doing swell as a bell, and I don't know how swell a bell is, and I don't know if I just made up an expression that nobody will ever use ever again, but it rhymed, and I'm all about the rhyme. Hey. So there we are. That's how we're doing.
You're looking swell and swole. On this Wednesday.
I know that's not true because Flames Talk fam member Wes Gilbertson obliterated my upper body strength today. Like, you know that he's sometimes a little bit quick with the wit.
Yeah.
Just massacred me. It, like, to the point where I am now airing the grievance on Flames Talk, where he will undoubtedly hear it. I expect a text from him, an apology within the next 5 minutes or so. He might be listening to the stream.
Hey, guys, I wouldn't know. I wasn't there. So, I wouldn't.
You're not sore about that, are you?
No.
You're not.
Not really.
Do you want to go golfing this week, buddy?
Somebody had to work on the show. We say this all in jest. I'm glad you guys got out, I'm glad you got to enjoy the summer weather. And honestly, we talked about this a little earlier this week, and I was like, we gotta carve out some time for it. Cause I didn't want to just, right. I wasn't prepared to talk about it on Tuesday's show. So I was like, let's carve out some time for it on this Wednesday show. So you and I are going to the draft in Vegas in a couple of months. We still don't have an official date for the draft.
Do we have official flight path?
We do have an official flight path that has been changed three times, okay. But it is official and confirmed. I'll forward it to you at
Did
some
I pay
point.
For that already?
Yes. Just okay. Not the hotel part.
Okay.
So we're off to Vegas in a couple of months, and we have a pretty good idea of where the Flames are going to pick. They are set to pick right now, ninth overall, or more accurately, they've got the ninth best draft lottery odds, which odds on suggest they will pick ninth overall. Is there a chance they could pick a little lower? Yes, if something unforeseen happens. And obviously, they've got an opportunity to win the draft lottery, which would be pretty friggin' cool as well. But outside of the Flames drafting Macklin Celebrini, and outside of them moving into the top pick, the guy most fans are excited about is Tiija Ginla. And I know Eric Francis wrote about him over at Sportsnet.ca on this Wednesday. And he's been added to Team Canada's U18 roster for the World U18s, which go in Finland. Comes after a 47-goal, 84-point campaign in 64 regular season games with the Kelowna Rockets. 9 more goals, 15 points in 11 playoff games with Kelowna as well. So the big question is, will the Flames take him if he's still there when they're up to the podium at the Sphere in late June? Should the Flames take him if Tiija Ginla has gone unselected when the Flames march up hypothetically at number 9 overall? And before we dive in on that question, we'd love to hear from you on the text line at 960-960 on this one. Before we dive in on all the different permutations and all the different forks this conversation can take, let's get a scouting report on Tiija Ginla, because when we go to the draft, we rely on the FC Hockey Draft Guide and we rely on the expertise and knowledge of one Aaron Vickers of NHL.com and FC Hockey. And I'm just curious as to what your scouting report says and what we're talking about when it comes to Tiija Ginla, who turns 18 in August.
So there are some parallels to, is it rude to call him his old man? I mean, that's just a term tossed out for dads, but like, I don't like calling Jerome Ginla old, so I apologize, Jerome, if you're listening. I don't mean it in a disparaging way, but Tiij, his scouting report, he is an absolute shot volume monster. I don't think he's seen a look that he doesn't at least consider or contemplate putting a puck on net. He's got really good general offensive awareness. He can play anywhere in the offensive zone. He can muck it up along the boards. He can find those quiet areas in the slot to be a pass receiver. He can play right at the net front. He's willing to just play anywhere inside of that offensive blue line. He has the ability, his skating is really strong. He has the ability, what I appreciate most in his skating, he has the ability to change pace on the fly. So if he's coming in on a defender and he's closing, he's able to create time and space for himself with his edges. He's able to come in maybe a little bit more slower and then give a burst of speed. Whatever he does, he's able to create time and space in the offensive zone and off the rush for himself with his skating. That said, I do think that there can be a little bit more decision-making in his game. His shot selection is something that I would like to see improve. And I'm going to put a little caveat on it. I've seen him three or four times this season. Obviously, one of the big standout performances for him was at the CHL Top Prospects game. Saw him after, but I didn't see him through the Kelowna Rockets WHL playoff run, where he had an absolutely amazing first round and kind of tailed off a little bit against the Kamloops Blazers team that was just an absolute juggernaut. So I haven't seen his playoff performance, and he's been one of the draft's fastest risers. I remember talking to you in Nashville, okay, like profile the kind of player you want. I want the guy that was a third or a fourth round pick in August that is suddenly a top 20 guy. And David Edstrom was one of those guys a couple of years ago that I really liked the trajectory on. Tiege has that sort of same trajectory. We pegged him in preliminary rankings as around a third round pick. Central Scouting, I think, had him as a B skater, which was a second or third round pick. We're still a little bit lower than him on consensus. We only have one of our four scouts that have filed reports on him inside the top 15, and we're not going to bend to consensus just because everybody else has him there. There are some things that our debate is he a top line player at the NHL level? Is he a second line player? I'm confident that he's going to be at least a top six player. It's evaluating some of the things that he needs to improve to determine whether or not, because I almost liken him a little bit to Cole Iserman, who's also a draft eligible, who is also a very high shot volume player, who's also a player that has some question marks about what does he look like when he's working in a five-man unit versus just his pure individual skill. And I think Tiege is better at the all-round, you know, using teammates and things of that sort. But at the end of the day, this is a player that if he hits his top end projection, he is going to be a top line, likely winger at the NHL level.
Okay, so that's a good scouting report, and I've got a clip here from Craig Conroy. This is from his year-end news conference on Friday, and you know, he was asked a little bit about so it was Pike who asked him about the draft and the draft class and said, you know, do you get input from Jerome because his son's in this draft class? He's got a lot of knowledge about this draft class from his coaching background and all the work he's done with a lot of these guys, either coaching them or coaching against a lot of guys who are eligible for this draft. And Craig Conroy basically said, yeah, we get a lot of input, but he has not seen Tiege's reports. Like the internal Flames reports on draft eligible Tiege Aginla, Jerome has not looked at those. He just doesn't feel comfortable doing that as of yet. But they were asked about would they have Tiege Aginla on the draft list, and Craig Conroy gave the exact answer that you'd want to hear in that regard when it comes to a player with such a famous last name.
We're going to just make the list the way, yeah, you know, every player is just from one to, I don't know how many we have on there right now, maybe 72, but, you know, that's kind of, yeah, we're just going to put everybody in the list it should be.
That's what you want to hear, and that is the correct answer. You can't not have Jerome's son on your draft list,
right?
Because he's Jerome's son. And you can't have him higher on your list because he's the son of somebody in your front office. Like, you need to do the best job possible of separating Tiege from Jerome and try to look at him regardless of his last name. And as almost impossible as that would be to do in this city and in this organization, you have to, if you're Craig Conroy, if you're the amateur scouting staff led by Todd Button, you've got to go out of your way to try and be as objective as possible when it comes to this player. That's the only way that you're going to make the best possible decision. Because if you let it in, if you don't guard against it and don't probably over guard against it impacting you one way or the other, you are in danger of making a decision where emotions or sentimentality come into it, either good or bad. So you have to be, you have to go out of your way to make this an objective decision.
Which is why you'll rely on Todd Button, a whole bunch in this sort of selection process. And you mentioned Jerome not seeing the reports and whatnot. Yeah, this is going to be largely, make no mistake, Craig Conroy is going to see everybody in the top 25 to 30 on the list. We know he's going to be in Finland for the U18s. There isn't a player that the Flames are considering at that pick that Craig Conroy hasn't seen live. I'm going to make that guess. I'm going to make that assumption. So you're going to, and let's be honest, Craig Conroy is probably not to the degree Jerome is, but to a certain degree, like, their families are close. We've heard Craig talk about it, and there's going to be maybe some, I don't want to say bias, because bias isn't the right word, but you can guarantee that Craig Conroy, regardless of where Tiege gets selected, Conroy's going to be in his corner hoping that he becomes the best NHLer, whether it's with the Calgary Flames, whether it's with the Anaheim Ducks, whoever it is.
Yep.
So that's when you need your Western regional scouts and you need Todd Button dialing it in to be like, okay, this is what we think and this is where we slot him. And then you just, the simplest answer is best player available on the list at that pick, whether it happens to be 9 or whether it happens to be 1, 2, 3, or if you end up sliding 1 or 2 picks.
So a lot of questions to figure out. Text line has already started jumping in at 960-960 for those of you listening live. So,
quick correction there. Yeah. It was Prince George that knocked Kelowna out. It wasn't Kamloops, I had mentioned.
Okay.
Kamloops didn't even qualify. But, hey, it's a BC team. That's where my mind goes. I always get them mixed up other than Kelowna.
You get Prince George and Kamloops mixed
up? Yeah,
I
know it doesn't make any sense. Like, you should mix up Kelowna and Kamloops, if anything. But it's just I've got a tie to Kelowna, so Kelowna's isolated in itself.
Okay.
And then just all the other BC teams, except Victoria's, okay, because you know it's on an island.
We're going to go down a real interesting rabbit hole, but I always, geographically, Prince George and Kamloops are right beside one another, as you know.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm a big fan of geography. Let's get this back on the rails.
The first question to determine, and obviously we're not going to know this until June 28th or whenever the draft ends up going, we think at the Sphere in Las Vegas, is Tiege Aginla still unselected when the Flames come up to the podium? So again, assuming they're going to draft 9th, and as awesome as it would be for them to win the draft lottery, let's just, for the sake of this conversation, assume that the odds don't work, the odds work in another team's favor, and it's San Jose or Anaheim or somebody else, Chicago, who ends up getting the number one overall pick, just for the sake of this conversation. Because it would be just an incredibly awesome story if in a few weeks' time we find out the Flames are winning the draft lottery. But just for this conversation, let's say they're drafting 9th. So if they come up to the podium at 9 and Tiege Aginla has not been selected with the first 8 picks, I guess how likely is that? And you go take a look at Central Scouting, NHL Central Scouting's final rankings. They have Tiege Aginla ranked as the 9th North American skater. Now, Central Scouting does not do an amalgamated list. They have 4 different categories, North America, Europe for skaters and goaltenders. So it's a little bit harder to suss out how the NHL and their Central Scouting department would have everything slotted out if they were to just put everybody together in a big mix, like FC Hockey does, like Sam Cosentino does over at Sportsnet.ca. Cos has him 10th on his overall Sportsnet rankings. So if it goes according to the way Cos has it, then Tiege would absolutely be available if the Flames came to the podium at number 9. But what's your read as to whether or not, when the Flames go to select, if indeed it is around number 9 overall, that Tiege would still be there?
So for me, I don't want to say a lot of it, but some of it will hinge on his performance at the U18s. But if I'm just looking at the FC ranking right now, which came out in, I believe, late February, you figure I would have that dialed right in terms of when it was released. But looking at the list, once you get past Celebrini and maybe Demidov for me, there is something that I can pick out in each of the players we have ranked in the top 10 that I'm not a fan of. So for me to sit here and declare it's impossible for Tiege to go in the top 8, or to say he will be available, I can't definitively make a statement on April 24 saying player X is going to go here, because one, all it takes is one team to really like a player. And I'm blanking on the Russian defenseman, or even Boot, I think they selected in Nashville as well, but they had two picks in the top like 15 or whatever, and they went massive Russians, but they picked players that were well off the consensus of where they should go.
Right.
So all it really takes is one team. Even Reinbacher for Montreal a couple seasons ago as well wasn't projected to go at five or wherever he went, but all it takes is one team to really like a guy. So when I sit here and look at the names that might be available around nine and trying to figure out if Iginla is available or not, it's easy probably, and maybe it's a cop-out to say, well, he'll either be there or they won't. All it takes is one team to really like him. I know, flaming hot take on Flames Talk today.
That's like me saying that, you know what, the game-winning goal was the goal that won the game. I said that recently.
And I prefaced it. I knew what I was saying there. But all it takes is one team to really like a guy. But at the same time, so I can see him being there, and I can see him
The reason I asked the question is because, you know, I threw those two rankings out at you, and Central Scouting has him as number nine on the North American skaters list,
yeah.
Which, of course, for instance, doesn't include Demidov. Demidov is number one.
Doesn't include Saleyev, Hellenius.
Exactly. Demidov, I believe, is the number one European skater on Central Scouting's list. Sam Cosentino, earlier this month, put out his April rankings, and he has Iginla 10, and that's more of an amalgamated top 32 list. But I asked the question because I've seen mock drafts that have him going in the top five. I've seen mock drafts that have him going not until like 15. It's all over the place, and that seems to be the book on this year's draft class, is that once you get past the first two or three picks, it becomes one of those things where one person's list, you know, a number four might not go until number 12, and then on another person's list, a number 15 could go at five. It sounds like the kind of mix up once you get past two or three is going to be pretty extreme.
Well, even to be perfectly honest, if we want to get into the draft class as a whole a little bit, after Celebrini, I'm not putting any money down on who goes number two. Now, if it was my draft board, Demidov might be the most explosive player in the draft, but there's also a Russian defenseman, Saleyev, who's 6'7", 207, and skates like Jay Bomeister. The problem with him is, what's his offensive upside? Because he doesn't have a whole lot. And then you can get into Berkeley Canton, who's an undersized center. You have Caden Lindstrom, who's a massive center of the Western Hockey League, but didn't play the back. I don't think he played post-December. Regardless, he missed 4 months of the season. And then there's some elements, if you really want to nitpick, in his game. And then you've got a whole slew of defensemen that who knows what order they go in. Sam Dickinson is the most well-rounded, but at the same time, does he have the highest upside? You have Zeev Bouyum, who is a very impressive, won the national championship with Denver. Artem Levchinov, like, there are so many different...
Levchinov is number two on Cosentino's list, for instance.
So, like, there is so much variance in terms of, again, there, you could kind of pick out one thing from
each
player.
So, I guess the moral of the story is that, yeah, there's a decent chance that he'll still... There's a decent chance that he'll still be there at number nine, but don't be surprised if he's gone.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he went in the top eight.
Okay. This is when it gets interesting. In your opinion, if he's there when the Flames step to the podium, should they avoid him because of his last name? And I ask that because of the worries about the undue pressure that would be put on the player because of what team he's drafted by and the number that just happens to be hanging in the rafters and all of what goes into being a human being with the last name of Iginla who is drafted by the Calgary Flames. Should they avoid, if he is on their list and the best player available, should they avoid taking him? My answer is unequivocally, no, they should not avoid that. If he is the best player on their list, then 1,000% they should take him.
I am of the exact same belief. If he is the top-ranked player on your list when you are selecting, you make that selection, and then the list makes the pick. You don't make the pick. You're not making it for sentimental reasons. You're not doing it so you can have another Iginla in the organization. You're doing that because the list that you compiled leading into the draft has him as the next best player to select. And I'll answer your question with maybe a question of my own. Do you think St. Louis would be upset had they drafted one of the Tkachuks? I think that that would be a very big win for him. Do you think Arizona slash Utah is shying away from drafting Josh Doan? And so far,
and
the tails
right.
To this point, it's now, worked out really well.
They got pretty lucky. The fact that they're moving to Utah,
that helps the situation.
Less of
a
Shane Doan legacy in Salt Lake than in Arizona. But I digress. You're right. So here's the flip side of that conversation. If they're up at 9, and there's one or two players on their list ahead of Tejah Ginla, and he's still unselected. Do they bump him up because the opportunity to take that type of legacy player? Do the Flames have the guts to not take him if he's still there? That might be the most interesting question of all, because do the Flames as an organization have the stomach to let a guy with that last name go flourish somewhere else when they have the opportunity to take him? It's different if he gets taken before you go.
Then it's out of your hands.
Then it's out of your hands. But if you've got the choice, do the Flames have the chutzpah to say no?
So here's the thing, because if you're going to use your list and he again was your top ranked player and you go and you take him, if he's not your top ranked player, you still go with the list in my mind. Now, here's where it gets interesting, because we'll get into a conversation, or it's sort of surrounding the whole Ginla talk, is what kind of pressure is there on that kid if and when he's selected by the Calgary Flames? But I'm just going to toss a name out there. Let's say Sam Dickinson is taken by the Flames with Ginla still on the board. Mm-hmm. What kind of pressure falls on Sam Dickinson knowing that the whole entire fan base literally, I don't know if I've come across a Flames fan that's like, no, I don't want to draft Tejah Ginla. So what kind of pressure is on the player they do select over Ginla, because they'll forever be linked in this Calgary market, I would suggest.
It's kind of why, the more I think about it, I'm like, look, I don't think trading up is realistic. It's so hard to trade up in the top 10.
And I don't think
10.
You need to. With this draft class, I don't think you necessarily need to.
It just, it's been, when's the last time that we've seen somebody move up meaningfully in the top 10? It happens so rarely in the NHL these days. It barely ever happens.
There's one more recent than Sedin with the Canucks. So
yeah,
draft,
I mean, there was,
but like,
the Canucks moved in when they traded Corey Schneider for number 9 overall.
That was just like a pure pick.
It was, but I guess it's the last time that I can, and I'm sure there's been one or two less significant ones inside the top 10 or 15 that have happened. My point is, it's very rare for you to move from number 9 to number 3. That just, it happens so rarely that realistically I don't see it happening. But the more I think about it, it's like you're almost in a situation where just pick the damn kid if he's number 9 overall. He is obviously a high-end prospect. He's got some of the most momentum in this draft class moving into the 2024 draft. And that way, can you ever, I know that as an organization, you're just trying to build a winner. I get it. But can you ever be criticized for making that pick? I don't think you can. Like, yeah, I guess you could have the people on nepotism. But it's not like they're reaching so far to take this guy. Again, all the rankings that we've thrown out there show him right in that ballpark.
If he was 35th and you're taking him at 9, that might raise some eyebrows. But with how he's trended throughout the season, again, if you have the emoji of the stock chart, it's just going up and up and up with how he's performed in the second half of the season. And it is no longer a question of did the Calgary Flames reach to take Jerome's son.
And that's why I'm like, you know, in this situation, yeah, you can tell me all you want about guys who like Catton or Lindstrom or some of the other names that are in that mix. If he's there, just take him. It's kind of where I know that it's really easy for Pat to say, who does not have a first round pick in the future of the organization riding on my shoulders.
Job on the line.
I'm hopefully still going to be here talking about whatever happens next season and beyond. I don't think that my job's on the line if they get this pick right or wrong. So from the outside, I'm just kind of like, there's so much that says do it. the easiest thing where you don't have that discussion, there's two things that would make it easier. You win the draft lottery and you take Celebrini. That'd be great. Or somebody else takes Aginla before you go up to the podium.
Those are the only two ways that this decision is out of your hands. If you're Craig Conroy, if you're Todd Button, if you're Jerome, Jerome's going to probably be at the table. He was last year. So the only way you can take this out of the Flames' hands is win the lottery or have him go before you pick.
But knowing that there is a very non-negligible chance that they'll be up to draft and Tiija Ginla will still be on the board, as this text says, and this is exactly where I've come around to, I'm not suggesting you go out of your way to move up and to go off of your board to do it. But as this text says, don't overthink it. Take the kid for once. I agree with Pat. I'm glad that the 9020, last four digits of this phone number, 9020. I'm glad that for once this person agrees with me. I know that it's super simplistic from some guy yapping his gums who doesn't make the decisions and doesn't deal with the consequences of the decision. But I've come around to the fact that if he's there, just take him.
Even if he's not number one on your list at that point?
Yep. Because there's no way he's going to be number 12 on your list if he's at 9.
No, right? But the one thing that I think gets overlooked every season at this time for fans of teams that aren't in the playoffs, Calgary's list versus Detroit's list versus Anaheim's list versus, I don't want to say San Jose because they're very likely to win the first overall pick, but these lists couldn't look more different if you lined them up. Where one team has a guy, how many times have we heard a team, particularly the Calgary Flames, go, oh, we got this guy in the second round, he was number 9 on our list. Like, these lists are very different, so I think there is a feasible chance that when the Flames pick, wherever it is, there is a guy ahead of Tiij on their list.
Got to get some texts at 960-960. This says, they should just take Aginla. We'll never know the order of their rankings behind closed doors. Trying to explain how you took the player one ahead of them on your board instead of Aginla would be crazy. They're better off saying, again, there was the this was the highest strength guy on their board. No one will ever question that. Looks like they're going to take Aginla. This DJ from the Foothills, if they don't take Iggy 2.0, it would be pretty hard to be a fan of this team, especially with them firing Sutter. I love the rebuild, but do it the right way. This says from Heath, if the Flames don't move up to anything higher than 6 and they don't take Aginla, they'll get crucified by the fan base. This says, not to mention the jersey sales that would go along with it. This reads, if Aginla is available in your range, you take that kid all day long. One or two players higher on your list will not be that much of a difference. Having a legacy player like that rarely ever happens. This reads, do you think Jerome will have any input on whether the Flames do or do not take him? To an extent, I'm sure that Craig, to his good friend, will say, how do you feel about this if this was to be the case? I'm sure he would have some input. And friends, I also think that it's not out of the realm of possibility that Jerome might step back for a little bit to help Tiij not have that pressure on him. Like, I think if the Flames were to make this selection, they would do everything in their power to alleviate any pressure or undue hyper expectation on it. And there's only so much you can do.
I was going to say, yeah. That's a lot of pressure. I don't know if you can insulate him from that.
But I think they do everything in their power to try to. What else we got here at 960-960? If the hockey gods exist, then to make amends for 2004, they will make it so that both Aginlas hoist the cup together. Well, I guess, you know, throw Joe into that mix. If you're talking about just Tiij and Jerome, throw Joe, the younger son, into the mix and could have three. Why not? Little Sedin's 2.0. I know they're not twins, but Gary reads, this is an easy conversation. If Tiij is available at number 9, you absolutely select him. Even if he's ranked number 10 to 15, you take him. The difference between picks through 26 through 25 is marginal at best, so you definitely take Tiij. The marketing and the hype makes it a no-brainer, especially moving into a new arena. This says Flames need to draft him no matter what. They need to create a buzz around this city again, and this is how you do it. I'm sure ownership wants that as well, especially with the new arena coming. Plus, Jerome can draft him. The story writes itself. Even if there's a better player available, you still have to take Tiege. This says, if Lindstrom and Aginla are both there when the Flames pick, who are they going to pick? I don't know. This from Dave in Calgary. Because we can't have nice things, the Flames will get passed and moved down during the draft lottery, and at the draft, the team ahead of them will take take Tiege.
Could you imagine? Oh, I hadn't even really wrapped my head around that one. That is cold-blooded.
This says, the offspring of a legend getting drafted by the team his father led. Zero expectations, no pressure whatsoever. What could possibly go wrong? I feel that, but I also think just do the damn thing. This says it's Jerome's call. Connie won't go against him if he thinks it's good for his son or bad for his son. If he's there, I think it's a yes. That's from Doug and Chaparral. This reads, Tiege is a no-brainer if he's there for the Flames. And this one, last one on it, hell yeah, take him. It's the Tiege Aginla input at 960. I know that it goes against everything like pragmatic and all that type of stuff that I pride myself on falling back on. But here I am saying, you know what? If he's there, let the sentimentality win out. Even if he's not the very best player available on your board, I say just do it. I just feel like you open yourself up for way, way more bad if you don't do it than if you do it. If that's the caveat, if he's still available when they go up to pick. I wonder if we'll have this conversation again in the next 2 months.
I would imagine maybe once or twice. And I was going to say, you can include Markstrom, you can include whatever you want here. Is the Flames draft situation as it pertains to the younger Aginla one of or the most compelling story that will unfold between now and June 27th or whenever it happens to be? Like, it's got to be in the top three. I don't think there's any question about that. I just wonder where it ranks when it's all said and done.
We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. We'll have full draft coverage for you in a couple months' time from Vegas. Vix and I will be there for the 2024 NHL Draft. Right now, we're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Cracked foundation, Boeing foundation walls. They have a simple permanent solution to stabilize your foundation. Contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time for a Wednesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and on the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Wednesday roundtable. Well, you know, we've talked many times about this over the last 4 or 5 months, but now that the offseason is officially upon us, gentlemen, now that we are running out of roundtables for this season, just Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then our Daily Flames roundtable will disappear until the fall. So I'll just throw this one out there and we can kick it around. Gents, what's your gut say? You know, less about what you think should happen, because and there's a lot of different opinions on what is best for the organization, but maybe more so how you feel this thing is actually going to play out. Gents, what's your gut say on what happens with Jacob Markstrom this summer?
My gut tells me he will probably be traded. And I say that mainly based on his comments. His comments around the trade deadline, he was unhappy. His name was out there when he didn't get dealt. And his comments on locker cleanout day, when he basically reiterated the same thing. And, you know, he's, I think, one of a number of veterans who's a little bit long in the tooth as far as their NHL career is concerned, and would probably like to have an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup or at least get to the playoffs. Because if you get in, if you're one of those 16 teams, then you've got a fighting chance. And for me, he could probably come around depending on what the Flames do this summer. but they would have to put themselves in a position where he saw this as a team that, again, could at least get to the playoffs and have a puncher's chance. Will Craig Conroy make the moves necessary to do that? Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But for me, that's probably the only way that Jacob Markstrom completes his contract as a member of the Calgary Flames. I just don't see him wanting to be part of at least a two-year retool or rebuild, however he looks at it. But again, a lot changed last offseason. A lot could change this offseason. And maybe that kind of changes how Jacob Markstrom feels about his future with the Flames.
The way I'll kind of approach this one is a roundabout way where I don't think there's a scenario where the Calgary Flames enter September with three NHL goalies. And naturally, I'm including Dustin Wolf in that conversation. So I don't imagine a scenario where it's Dustin Wolf, Dan Vladar, Jacob Markstrom all back in camp. So who are you going to subtract? Well, it's not going to be Dustin Wolf. That's that one's a no-brainer. Even I can figure that one out on my own. I don't need to do any math to sort that. So who leaves? Is it Dan Vladar, who's recovering from hip surgery, or is it Jacob Markstrom, who voiced some non-committal comments on locker cleanout day? If I had to pick one or the other leaving, I would go Jacob Markstrom, and I think there's going to be a scenario where the New Jersey Devils circle back, even with the acquisition of Jake Allen at the trade deadline. There's going to be one or two NHL teams that are more significantly disappointed with a first-round exit and potentially goaltending being an issue to add more teams to the pool, if you will. Now, keeping this in mind, Jacob Markstrom is still in full control of his situation, having a full no move. But listening to what he had to say on locker cleanout day, knowing that the Flames aren't likely to have three goalies come training camp in September, I'm going to peg Jacob Markstrom as, I don't want to say the odd man out, but the one that isn't here come the fall.
I know for a fact the Flames aren't just going to trade him solely for the sake of trading him. That's not going to happen, but I do firmly believe that the Flames are going to, go out of their way to try to grant his request. And whether it's a formal trade request or not, I think the Flames are well aware that his preference would be to have an opportunity to be on a team that could go on a deep playoff run, to be on a team that could compete for a Stanley Cup. And I think he also understands, because, look, I mean, he's got one of the highest profile agents in the biz in Pat Morris. Jacob is a very smart individual himself. He understands what's happening. He knows that he's going to be one of the, if not the top goaltending commodity on the market. And he knows exactly what Aaron just said, guys, and that is that there's going to be teams that are in the playoffs right now that aren't happy with their goaltending, whether it's the LA Kings or the Colorado Avalanche or the Carolina Hurricanes or the Toronto Maple Leafs or whatever the case may be. And there's just four teams off the top of my head who I think could be in a few weeks' time sitting here saying, damn, we went out way earlier than we wanted to, thought we would, and believed that we should have gone out, and goaltending was the sole reason why. We need an upgrade. And I think Jacob, with 2 years left on his contract, is going to be probably the top goaltending target out there in the offseason. I think Jacob knows that, and thus I think that he's going to be open to a lot of things that might come across Craig Conroy's desk. I think the Flames are aware of what Jacob's number one priority is. And that's why, guys, I do think that, yeah, if my gut, if you're asking me my straight-up gut feeling, I think that he is dealt. I think that he is elsewhere to begin next season. And I think that if he's back to start next season, it won't be for a lack of the Flames trying to make that happen. It'll be just because the offers weren't there, the value wasn't there, whatever the case may be. But I think the value will be there. And I think that they'll get something done at some point in the next 4 months or so.
The only thing I would say about the value being there is that the other 31 NHL teams know what position the Flames are in and know that they have three goaltenders and two nets, and know that they have, you know, two-time AHL goaltender of the year and last season's league MVP, Dustin Wolf, waiting in the wings, and they can only go so long without creating a spot for him as a full-time NHLer. And I've got to believe that that's going to be at the start of next season. So Would they go with a three-headed monster if they had to? I suppose they could. I mean, they're not in win Stanley Cup now mode. So if Craig Conroy doesn't like what's out there during the offseason, assuming the plan is to trade Jacob Markstrom between now and the start of next season, then he could hold out. He could wait for an injury. He could wait for a team that gets off to a bad start next season and decides that goaltending is the biggest reason why. So there are different ways that this thing could go. And the one thing I caution myself about, and this really goes back to last summer, guys, the Flames had the 6 big time pending UFAs. I was convinced they were going to trade all or most of them if they couldn't re-sign them before the start of the season. That didn't happen. They traded one of them. That was Tyler Toffoli. So Craig Conroy obviously didn't get offers that he was happy with for any of the other guys. He re-signed Michael Backlund, of course, but the other 4 guys. So he played the waiting game and got a great return, I would say, for 2 of his players. And we'll have to wait and see on the return he got for the other 2 guys. But if the right deal isn't there, to your point, Pat, I don't think that Conroy is going to trade Markstrom just for the sake of trading Markstrom. I think he is in a position with where this franchise is where, you know, he can play the waiting game if he has to.
And that would be the exact right approach. I don't think he should be dictated by 2 nets, 3 goalies. If you're going to have to give Jacob Markstrom away or make a deal where you don't feel like you're dealing from a position of strength and thus are compromising what you might be able to return, then by all means be patient. By all means wait. And you've got a goalie in Jacob Markstrom who, to me, is nothing but professional and will come in and still do the job that you're asking him to do. It's just under less ideal circumstances.
Well, and the other thing is, we don't know what Dan Vladar's status is going to be. I know that the hip surgery that he had in March was supposed to have him ready for the start of training camp, and it sounds like he's on track, but we don't know how that's all going to play itself out. And we also, I think that Dustin Wolf has jumped Dan in some respects when it comes to priorities. And you know, it's kind of, and we don't know how much the hip situation that Dan's been dealing with has affected him the last couple of years, where his numbers have been, you know, pretty mediocre when you take a look at the save percentage for the last 2 seasons. But, you know, I don't think it's completely out of the question that if they can't find something with Jacob Markstrom, they would make something happen with Dan Vladar. Or even be okay relegating Dan to the number 3 on the depth chart for next season to begin if something hasn't materialized with Jacob. Now, I think that is the least or the less likely outcome of this conversation. I do think that with multiple teams likely being interested in finding goaltending this summer, that the Flames will be able to find a partner for Jacob Markstrom. But I guess to your point, Wilsey, the patient approach and not being pushed around or feel like you're forced into a corner, I still think they have that option to them because they'll have some other roads that they could explore if something doesn't come to fruition this summer with Jacob.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. I mean, this team, and ultimately they didn't get to the playoffs anyway and weren't close, but this team wouldn't have been as good as they were without Jacob Markstrom returning to form this season. So can a new tandem keep the Flames competitive next season? Well, some fans probably don't want them to be all that competitive and want them to get a top 5 or 4 or 3 or 2 or number 1 overall pick next season by being bad. But I know there's another portion of the fan base that does want to watch a competitive team. You know, even if that team doesn't get to the playoffs and doesn't win a round or more, it is more fun watching a team that can at least compete to win hockey games and wins their fair share. So with Jacob Markstrom, I think the Flames could be that team. Without him, I'm not as sure, but who knows? Maybe Dustin Wolf takes a big step. Maybe whoever is his partner next season gives the Flames a chance to win most nights. So we'll see. But for me, and I've said this before, I'll say it at least one more time, this whole Jacob Markstrom situation is the most fascinating for me for the Flames going into the offseason. What do they do or don't they do with him? And if they move him, what do they get for him?
Daily Flames Roundtable. It's Derek, Aaron, Pat on this Wednesday. Gents, Wednesday night is game one of a best of three Calder Cup playoff first round series between the number one affiliate of the Calgary Flames, the Calgary Wranglers, and the Tucson Roadrunners. Matt Coronato is going to be a big part of any success the Wranglers have in the Calder Cup playoffs this year. That is how Matt Coronato is going to finish this season. He's going to finish this year playing in the AHL playoffs. Knowing what we saw from him this year, knowing how his first professional season went, gents, what are fair expectations for Matt Coronato next year as a sophomore pro?
Well, first of all, top nine right winger. I think he will graduate into a spot on the first, second, or third line. Now, with that said, I actually thought putting him on the fourth line was a really smart move by the Flames because it got him into NHL games where there wasn't a spot in the top nine. Okay, well, you don't have a spot on your first, second, or third line, play him in your fourth line. And as we've all said, and as Ryan Huska and I believe Craig Conroy have also said, listen, this guy doesn't project to be a fourth line player. He's going to be a top nine player. That's what he's been his whole career, and he's had a lot of success playing in primarily a top six role at every level. So I think he'll be a top nine winger. I know that if you look at the depth chart right now, there isn't necessarily a spot for him, but I believe that they will find a spot in some way, shape, or form for Matt Coronato to play in their top nine. And I think the reps he got playing on the fourth line are going to help him take a step forward in his second professional season. Learned how to be better without the puck, learned the importance of working hard, which is certainly something you couldn't question on most nights with Matt Coronato. Learned the importance of being responsible defensively, of how to get in there and create some havoc on the forecheck. He did all of those things, and I think did them well for a guy who had really never played in that fourth line role before. So I think he's going to earn a spot in the top nine. And I think he's a guy who now with he's got a first professional season under his belt. He has had a chance to adapt to going from college hockey, where you practice probably more than you play, to pro hockey, where you play as much, if not more, than you practice, and has learned how to live the professional lifestyle at both the AHL and NHL level. So, you know, getting that first season out of the way and kind of just getting adjusted to professional life as a guy in both the AHL and the NHL, I think it's really going to help him going into his second season. So top nine winger for me, guys, and a guy who I think will probably score somewhere between 10 and 20 goals.
Yeah, for me, I'm of the same mind. Willsey is a top nine role, and whether that's with Michael Backlund, whether it's eventually with Nazem Kadri, depending how things shake out, whether it's Connor Zary or another center down the line, I see this player, Matt Coronato, as a top nine winger next season, and he just has a better understanding and realization of what it takes to be a pro, and that's not a knock on anything because he's a college player. He's, as you mentioned, Willsey, he's used to practicing more than he's playing, and this is by far his biggest season in terms of games played. But even when you go back and you look at his time with the Chicago Steel or at Harvard or even with the Calgary Wranglers, he's been a top-line goal-scoring forward for whichever organization he's with. Now, is it fair to suggest that he's going to be that immediately for the Calgary Flames as soon as next season? I don't necessarily think so. But he has a skill set, as you mentioned. His compete level's there. His puck battles are there. He's learning more about the 200-foot game. And I think his last call-up was the best that we've seen of Matt Coronato. I think he can take all of those things and parlay that into a top nine forward spot with the Calgary Flames next season. I think that's where the expectation should be.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that we also saw some pretty good progression from him throughout the year. You know, he was the story of training camp, and we all agreed that he earned a spot on the NHL roster to begin the regular season. He spent the first month or so in the NHL, didn't have as much success, get sent to the American League, and then he has a lot of success in the AHL, turned himself into one of the most productive rookies in the AHL and was a huge part of that Wranglers team's offense. And you know, got some spot recalls here and there, and then mid-March came up for the rest of the season. And the difference between him at the end of the season and the final month as compared to his first month of the season in the NHL was it was night and day. He looked stronger. He looked more comfortable. He was more engaged in battles. His work away from the puck was better, and he was getting his shot off even more. And there's a whole lot more work to do, especially when it comes to getting more opportunities, getting more shot attempts, getting those attempts from more dangerous areas. Those are all things that Matt can work on, but I think the steps that he took this year and now going into an offseason with eyes wide open on what a professional hockey season feels like on your body, I think it's going to be a very important and very big offseason for him. And I think he comes back to training camp, and I'm expecting him to be a no-brainer on the roster. And, yeah, I think top nine and number two power play time and all that type of stuff. I'm just expecting him to be a regular in the NHL next year. And I don't know if I would have been saying that as confidently had I not seen what we saw from him in the final month of the season. Guy, right. I just thought it was a whole, it looked so much different, and he showed so much progress in the kind of the extended NHL stints we saw from him in October compared to March and April.
Yeah, and for me, the biggest step that he took, and if we were to ask Ryan Huska about it, because I did ask him about it at times, but I haven't asked him about it recently, you know, Ryan talked about consistency being important for Matt because he would have flashes where he looked like a fairly dominant player for stretches in games, but not for entire games or game after game. So I do think he took a step in that regard. But for me, you know, just watching him while calling games, the one thing that I thought he struggled with the most was finding time and space at the NHL level, something that he's obviously done at every other level. So I thought during his last recall, he was doing a better job finding time and space and putting himself in a position to use his best weapon, which is his shot. So I think he learned a lot in his first professional season. It'll make him better in his second professional season, which I suspect will probably be played, if not exclusively, at the NHL level, then certainly more in the NHL than in the AHL. And Pat, to your point, the offseason is going to be important for Matt Coronato, as it is for every player, but I would say especially young ones.
All right, boys, we've got two more roundtables this year. The penultimate roundtable of the season is on Thursday. We'll talk to you then, Willsey. Thank you, as always.
All right, guys, have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Shannon Cam, our producers, this hour as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Aaron Vickers is on Twitter at AA Vickers. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at mercedesbenzcountryhills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.